Welcome aboard the Shipshape Podcast, your ultimate destination for marine wisdom and expertise. Our skilled crew, comprised of top boating journalists and experts, is committed to delivering informative and captivating content week after week. We're eager to connect with and learn from our fellow mariners, and we encourage you to share our podcast with your friends. Remember, word of mouth is our lifeblood. And if you enjoy an episode, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. By doing so, you're helping us forge a robust community of mariners who can learn, collaborate, and exchange their experiences out on the water.
This week on the Shipshape Podcast, we are speaking to Margarita Amon, founder of IMS GmbH, which is Interior Management Systems. She's also the brains behind Grit Unlocked, which is the first platform in yachting in Europe, which focuses on a diverse pool of elite talents of thinkers, cultures, genders, and much more. As an expert in hospitality across multiple sectors, with plenty of industry experience under her belt, we are delighted to have Margarita with us today to dive into issues of diversity, equality, inclusion, and representation within the industry. So my name is Georgia Tyndale, and I'm a freelance editor and writer based in Lancaster in the UK. And I am joined by Meryl.
Meryl Charette. I'm a liveaboard on a Ta Shang Toshiba 36 in Boston, Massachusetts.
So Margarita, where are you recording this from?
Hi, I'm based in Bremen, where I was actually born and educated. It's evening for us here, and it's really great that you guys found the time being in the US and the UK to have this conversation.
Well, it's quite late where you are right now, and it's nice in the middle of the day for me. Georgia might be kind of late for you too. So Margarita, yeah. How long have you been in the marine industry?
In the marine industry, which for me is yachting and a contract on a cruise ship, it's now since, I think, 2007. 9 years my business, 8 years in yachting, so 17 years. Yeah, 17 years in the marine industry. Before that, I was 10 years in hospitality on land, which included restaurants, hotels, bars, clubs, and not just in Germany, also in New York and other cities of Germany.
So was your first foray into yachting actually as yacht crew?
Yeah. Well, I was running a restaurant close to the shipyards here in up north in Bremen. So where Arbe King and Rasmussen and Lursen is, and the project managers and the crew, as per usual, would come have their lunches and in the evenings have their cocktails. And just like on the clock, they would always have one drink too many and then behave in very unflattering ways. I was thinking in that moment, and they would just keep talking about the industry, how great it is, that I should work with them and all of that conversation, which obviously I didn't take serious. I was running a restaurant and they were, legs akimbo. So, but after a little bit of research, 6-7 months into the industry, I decided that it's worthwhile giving it a go. Was a bit of a scary move, but yeah.
Yeah. So tell us what that was like, your first experience working as yacht crew.
The first experience, well, that was on a 55-meter, and all English-speaking, native English-speaking crew, predominantly British, predominantly Australian. Well, you may need to place a trigger warning for the people who are sensitive when it comes to this, but they behaved pretty stereotypically, which I was a bit shocked by, because for some reason I expected them on board what Yachtsife pictured as a 5-7-star entity, because it's completely private, it's completely about leisure, privacy, luxury, and well-being and entertainment. Then to see the little to no experience in the fine dining segment, and very mediocre etiquette understanding, I was a bit shocked. I thought I'd come there to learn. And then very quickly, it was the other way around. So I started as a regular stewardess, but it didn't take long to rise up to the chief stewardess. The only issue that I've on a daily basis had to battle was that native English speakers do not like to take neither advice nor work orders or appraisal or the other thing from someone who is foreign. So very, very quickly, they isolated me, they mocked me, gossiped by my back, tried to deliver shoddy work, get out of work earlier, come back late, or come back late in the morning. All of those things that you wouldn't see in a professional workspace on land. That wouldn't fly in the cheapest bar. If you come late to your shift once or twice, the third time you're not going to come anymore into that bar. But somehow on board, there's different rules depending on your task put a bit. And at a later stage, there were even more brutal comments, because when they see they can get away with it and the head of departments, the captains and engineers don't do anything or join it, then, you know, it's a closed environment, its own little world. It's almost, it's obviously not as bad as, but people are familiar with the experiment, you know, where people become officers, the other ones become prisoners and all of that. So it becomes its own dynamic, which had its climax moment. And then led to, you know, some people leaving the boat, some new people joining, and that kind of rectified that wrong behavior. Some of the comments that fell were like, people like you didn't used to sit with us at the same table. And we were a small crew mess that wasn't like an officer's mess and a regular mess, you know. So that was my intro to yachting, you know.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty rocky start, actually. And it sounds like you had some pretty stern lessons early on about what it might be like, and yet you decided to stick it out. So what was it that made you decide to keep going, even though, you know, you were coming up against all these obstacles and all these things that you wouldn't have expected in the industry?
Well, I'm used to the hard way. So I'm used to the jump and run game of life. I'm Greek Pakistani. We were born not into wealth, so I always had to fight or struggle a bit and do more than others. So I started working when I was 12 years old. Mm-hmm. So when others are going on the family vacation, I was cleaning dishes, carrying 5-10 liter buckets of tzatziki up there and all of these things. I'm used to having it a bit more harder. And the main reason why I wanted to stick it out and I'm still in this industry is because the owners that I've met were wonderful people. I haven't experienced any racism or sexism or any of these things within them. And that was, for me, very intriguing. I thought, okay, then it's definitely in the middle, not on the top, because I take pride in my work as a hospitality expert. I see it as my stewardship and my responsibility to always give my best. And where else, other than in the most luxurious, unlimited industry, can I perform to the highest level where not budget or politics or anything else would simmer it down? So to me, this is the Olympics. I am a freaking gold medalist athlete. Where else should I be other than here?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I've heard this from, you know, many designers. There's so much excitement within design, within yachting, because, you know, it's not a complete carte blanche always, you know, but money doesn't have to be an object, does it? So you can really think creatively and innovatively and, you know, really, really do your best within design and hospitality and whatever sphere you're in within yachting. It's an enabler, as well as perhaps being backward in some ways that we'll get into.
To me, it's not just the unlimited freedom that I can do what I want. Like a designer can just really let his wild horses in the head run. To me, it's also the challenge, you know, to turn an owner around, as in they often come with a very critical first interaction, maybe even to a point where it feels like, as they have people so close to them, we grow close to them, which is a very sensitive relationship. You can't overstep. Some people do, even butlers from decades of experience, overstep and become too close to the owner. But you can also not be too far away. But I love that interaction and challenge to convince them just through your actions, not through words, that you are fully dedicated to what you're doing, to perfect even the thing that you considered perfect before. People say you can't reach perfection, but I disagree. I believe you can reach perfection. And 2019, I've achieved perfection with a manual that I created. 2023, I've looked at it again and I said, now I can do it even better. And you find a new way and you raise the challenge. That's what I like. I would think I'm a frugal person, or at least that's what people have said. And I like to be, you know, mindful of resources. And you can do so many things just through being attentive. And that's what I mean, what owners are looking for. And since, you know, it is such a sensitive relationship and you carry a lot of responsibility and trust, it needs to be handled this way. And that's what I see also as a discipline, you know, not just how you serve the table, how you carve the turkey or the fish and all of these things. Yes, these are great disciplines, but these are the technicalities of the job. But the way you make the owner and his guest feel, that they start joking around, calling you and the stewardess ninjas because they don't see you, but you deliver and everything is charged and the glasses, sunglasses are polished, even though they just came out of the water, jumped into it, you know, and they use sunscreen. So you quickly jump in, polish the glasses, put them back, and they immediately notice. They notice the little shifts. And that's why I think it's also maybe even partly hurtful when somebody leaves you who's been in your, not just in your employment, but who's been your assistant or your shadow. And that's why I think in the beginning of any new employment, it's a bit of a learning phase where you get to know and get close to an owner until you can see what they want and anticipate it before they even voice it. It's just an eyebrow lift or a shift of the head. That's what I love and I enjoy, and that they can see that you give 100%.
I want to go back to this unprofessionalism that you experienced when you initially came on that first boat. How pervasive is this unprofessionalism within the yachting industry? And has it changed over time? How have you kind of seen that side of the industry in hospitality?
Yeah, that's a difficult question, because in the beginning, and every time I told my commercial hospitality colleagues and friends of what's going on board, that's, well, they said that they could never live a day and work a day on land. I like to believe that it got better because of the size of the yachts, that they are larger, but it would be foolish to believe that this is not still pervasive. It's the same thing as people say, oh, sexism is not as bad or not around anymore, or racism is not around anymore. Yes, it has, it's just adapted. You know, now even on large yachts, you think they're more professional, they have the best structures in place and all of this, you would think that. But when you look into the paperwork, yeah, these are the same documentation that they used 15 to 20 years ago. 17 years, I can tell you. I've looked at paperwork about surface care and structures and SOPs. 17 years later, every time we consult on a new build or refit, it's exactly the same paperwork. Nothing has changed, not even a word. The only thing that might change is depending on which management company is involved, they change the color of the frame they put around the paperwork that they hand over. But it's still 17-year-old paper. So how can the next generation that comes into yachting learn if they're still using tools that are 17 years ago? And the people who are in a decision-making spot, they usually don't know much about hospitality other than sitting on the other side as a guest. But if you don't know the field that you're supposed to be leading, where are you leading them to?
So what do you wish you knew before you had entered the industry?
Well, when I entered the industry, I wasn't as vocal or mouthy as some people might say. I'll go with vocal on these subjects. There's nothing really that can prepare you for it. The courses that I did, because they didn't accept my hospitality management degree and education, I didn't find them useful at all. I wish the people that I consider now friends and allies, I wish I would have known them earlier instead of so late, but better than never, I guess.
Did you have any big influences or mentors in your early career?
In my early career, and still today, I would consider Lars van Dinter. He was captain for a long time, also for the original Coral Island. And he's built different yachts as an owner's representative from Radiant to Jupiter. Him, I respect, and I know I can trust him. There's several others who've my very first client, Captain Claudio, and his wife, they were incredibly supportive and very innovative and forward-thinking people. They immediately saw the app and said, yes, we want it. And just after 5 minutes of conversation and whatever other information he's, I guess, collected from people like Alberto from Nautica Assistant or Lars van Dinter, he just decided, yeah, there's an app. We need it for our hotel management. And that was it. With others, you have hours and days long conversation, and afterwards they try to maybe fish some of the designs you've made. But he was just quick and decisive and demanding, but also trusting, which I'm going to be forever thankful to Claudio and to Betty, his wife. Yeah, I'm currently just building these kind of friendships and allyships. It's just within a yachting shoreside space, there is, because of now on the shoreside support as well, there's a few more people from designers like Dasha or Marie from Bergman. But when it comes to those mentorships programs, they feel so well-intended, and the people who are running them, may it be the crew coach like Corinne Raisin or She of the Sea, the ladies from there, or Emma from Seize the Mind, they're so well-intended and so enthusiastic, but they carry a lot on their shoulders. So it seems like either management should be supporting them a bit more, or crew might be a little bit flaky due to the strenuous hours. But it would be wonderful. It would be something more serious about that level of mentorship. Because mentorship, especially when I look at the YPY, and I'm just there for 1 year because I'm 39 now, so my time's ticking. But I jumped in late. But it still feels, and it might be a little bit of a too early assessment, but when I look at it and the conversations that I'm holding with the individual chapters of the YPY and the individuals in it, it feels a little bit like the country club of the children, you know, of the big companies, because most of them, I'm sorry to say this, but most of them have not worked on board. That's the first thing. Most of them either come from uni or work in a large company who is paying the fee for it. So there is no strain on them other than let the kids play and get familiar with each other until they work in the big company. So they're all, you know, it's a little bit like a country club. Like, this is where we go and this is where we golf. And none of that feels like, hey, let's tackle a topic and let's do it seriously. That's what I'm missing.
Yeah. I mean, we've touched on this before, but in terms of organizations paying lip service to issues of diversity and inclusion, I know this is something you feel very strongly about. How have you kind of experienced that within the industry?
Well, it frustrates me. First of all, I love it that the topic has come up. But if we remember back when we all witnessed the murder of George Floyd, how many have you seen in the industry putting up a black square? I just know Clyde & Co. as the only company who has put up a black square. And it doesn't mean that you have to. But if you jump on any other trend, you don't have the decency to do this one. You don't know any person of ethnicity,
On the Barbie trend, I must say, more doing Barbie than George Floyd, I think, right?
Yeah. And the Barbie movie, I haven't watched it. I've seen some people online going on about it like they did about the Black Mermaid. So I'm kind of amused by it. But that movie doesn't make me want to watch it because it's a lot of pink, a lot of white, a lot of blonde. So that kind of, you know, I'm not the demographic, but since everyone is getting so upset with it, I'm more and more intrigued in watching it, you know, because it reminds me of, you know, Black Ariel, everybody went nuts. Yeah, but when it comes to the efforts of the industry of equality, they start to, how to say it in a nice way. Well, you say lip service, or they show just, you know, they're just virtue signaling. But oftentimes they not even do that, because how can they signal how great they are if there's no black person and no person of ethnicity in the industry? If you look at any company, for example, Burgess, look at the Meet the Team. It looks like a family portrait taken individually. I just look related. I don't think that they are, you know, but what I mean by that is they running their very limited circle. They don't leave a door open to meet other people. I constantly meet new people. And guess what? They're Polish, they're German, they're Syrian, they're Lebanese, they're from everywhere. Kenyan, you know, and that's how I met Kenyans here, who connected me with Kenyans in Nairobi, and I became friends with them. And together with them, I opened GRID, because I alone, just because I'm half Pakistani or a woman, cannot just do GRID and say, look at us, we are doing diversity. Then I'm basically doing the same thing what I'm criticizing, all the white women talking about diversity. And it's just white feminism, basically. That's what it is. And I can't do the same. That's why I wanted more cultures in it.
I think a key term here is, of course, intersectionality, isn't it? That's what we need to be thinking about here. And of course, the fact that different aspects of a person impact how they are in the world, you know, the fact that one is disabled, the fact that you're from an ethnic minority background, the fact that you grew up in poverty or whatever, all these different elements come together, don't they, and impact how you are in the world and how you can be perceived in the world and how other people approach you. And you can't just look at one particular thing, can you? And if we just have the white feminists, then women talking, having the conversation, then we're not able to, you know, cover all those different things.
It's funny how it repeats, you know. I always want to hope for the best, and think of someone, they don't do this on purpose. And that's why I seek these conversations. Hey, when you say this and this, it means, you know, that's how it come across to someone who's of ethnicity, because close with Filipino crew, Indian crew and all of that, because I know they know they can confide in me. So they trust what they, and I trust them, what they tell me, you know, because it's truthful and something that I've experienced too. They don't really go to other people because what they receive is also my experience. They question if what you say is the truth. I even had it with a Caucasian male who works in a brokerage company. He said, but is it really that bad? Is it really that bad to get hit on as a woman and you know, getting compliments? And that's how he saw it. I said, I understand that when you walk around in a dress in Monaco, that it's not as bad, you know, as my experience. But if someone in a, obviously not just in, intoxicated, but with his pupils, like, you know, plates, tries to undress you and it's just 8 o'clock in the evening, you know where their hype came from. And if this happens to you and you share the story, you know, and you got away and then you still get questions if this is really what happened, you don't want to talk about this to anyone. If they come and insult you and hurt you in a very fragile state, saying that really, is this really, was it this bad? So obviously they don't go to these people to talk, so they keep it all inside. And I guess that's one of the reasons why the space of diversity is a bit colonized by the Caucasian industry, for the lack of a better term.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing is, it comes up in so many different issues, you know, areas within yachting. I recently wrote a piece on size discrimination in yachting. And I didn't necessarily expect it to go this way, but it very much went down a sort of racial angle, because if you're discriminating against crew by saying you have to fit into the escort, you have to be a particular size, a particular shape, you've already got an aesthetic in mind, right? And if you have an aesthetic in mind, that absolutely is going to correspond with race, isn't it? In some ways. And then, so you're already discriminating, but you're pretending that you're not, because you can say, oh no, we just need people to be healthy. We just need people to fit into this tiny sport because they're healthy. But health and fat, it's not the same thing at all, but it's just a very convenient cover-up. And the stories I heard from women talking about their experiences, but they all wanted to, you know, the ladies who weren't white had to be anonymous, because they basically were like, if I come forward and tell you more and it's identified, I'm going to be quickly spotted because there's only two people who it could be. That's the thing. And it's what you were saying about the conversations. It's scary to have them, basically.
Yeah, isn't it? Psychologically not safe at all. And the only reason why I voice this now is because I'm more in a safer space now that I'm shoreside. But also I've experienced this level of discrimination seeping into my business, which means oftentimes when there is no other reason, everybody says what a great product you have and how wonderful it is, and it fills the niche and a need that they have. But then they want to walk all over you, try to copy it, take samples of it, go to other companies, say, can you, you know, duplicate this or that and the other. Or they even outright say it, as in, if you want to work with us, since you're nobody and you have no affiliations, you should be taking a smaller piece of the pie, or I should be grateful. You know, one client, very notorious client, he's known in this industry, they owed me over 100 grand. And he had the audacity just to tell me to my face that you're nobody, you're very small, be grateful to take the 20,000 that we're offering you. And he even got the captain to bully me into that too, saying like, how can you afford the lawyers and all of that stuff? I don't care, if I'm going to do a Walkman Sony thing and it's a Pyrrhus victory, you know, where he loses everything, but he wins. I happily, because I'm hard-headed, I happily go down this road before I give him even my permission to treat me this way. And it looks like, from my perspective, obviously it's not always like this, but how come that other companies that do different or similar things, but not to that level or to the same level as I, they are successful. They're let in through the door, you know, into the club and do the business, and I don't. And yet everybody compliments it. It doesn't really fit. So I'm still trying to make sense of it. I'm still working on it, but it does feel very selective. You know, if you're not their cousin or whatever, you don't get in. But I'm still here because there's still captains who are, you know, open-minded, and they're getting also more and more vocal. You know, people are more open to venturing out of the big company names. I think you can see that also in the regular and the commercial world, that people don't necessarily go with the big brands like Velleda all the time, you know, because the marketing is such a huge machinery, or with makeup the same. So people now look at more sustainable, small boutique companies, you know, who fill a niche and come from a more, I would say, a more honest place. And that's why trust can be actually be rebuilt. Because, and I think I see the same in yachting, that the trust to the big, to the large corporations is, they're losing it. And quick fixes and toxic positive news, as in send us your nicest sunset picture, is not going to fix the issues that we're having in this industry.
Ahoy, investors. Are you on the lookout for a unique opportunity to invest in a thriving industry? Set your sights on Shipshape, the innovative platform connecting boat and yacht owners with top-notch marine service providers. Our team is committed to revolutionizing the marine repair and refit market in North America. But we can't sail these seas alone. With your support, we can enhance our platform and create a significant impact in the industry. Don't let this exciting investment opportunity drift away. Contact us today to learn more about joining our voyage. Reach out to us at info@shipshape.pro.
So, you know, the yachting industry, which is primarily and traditionally been dominated by white men, can you give us one systematic barrier that you've seen that you're just like, what the hell?
I think you can see a barrier like this any of those levels, entry levels. I know from a South African, black South African stewardess, and the same had happened to me. When you hand in your CVs, some of the recruitment companies come up with reasons why you're not suitable. You know, that, oh, this is now the pandemic, don't bother. Or they're looking for European crew, you know, which is code for, you know, don't give me Russians, don't give me Ukrainians, don't give me blacks, don't give me browns, you know. Except for Filipinos, of course, they're never included in this because they're not just so hard, dedicated worker, but they're so ingrained in the maritime industry. Cannot do any of the sectors, I think, in maritime without them. But yeah, I see it within the recruitment segment, not with all recruitment companies, but with some I've had that feedback and experience. And same when it comes to trying to get an appointment with maybe some of the very hotshot designers or with the upper management level of management companies, very hard to get an appointment. I've recently was lucky after 9 years running this business to have a meeting with Peter Lursen, who was very receptive and positive towards my products. But it did take me 9 years to meet him and for him to know who is this girl just down the river doing something in the yachting space. So yeah, I think there is definitely a barrier there. And it's also a barrier that money seems to be closing that door for many, because it is expensive. Not necessarily the YPY, the YPY membership, but it is expensive to come to Monaco. It is expensive to travel to London and meet with companies. It's expensive to come to those restaurants and bars and try to intercept or interact or meet them on the spaces. It's easier for the people who already live there or who already work in those companies, because the companies then carrying the traveling costs and so on.
What I have seen, and you know, you're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong on this, but there seems to be a tendency within marine organizations to pluck a woman out of the masses, give her a leadership role within the organization, and then pretty much say, we put you here, toe the line, do what we say, and just don't speak up. How have you seen that unfold?
Recently, I had a conversation with someone and he said, but racism is kind of dying down because the old generation is leaving the industry. They're retiring and all of that. And I said, well, it's funny that you say this because I see something else. And that's exactly what you say. They pick someone that fits their ideology and they place them in a position where they want them. So it's, even though they might retire, they still have control. May it be in the culture that they want to run the company in, or, you know, whatever it is. And sometimes it happens to the innocent ones who think, yes, great, I have an opportunity to make a difference. And then they get muzzled. I see that as well, because they're not given the space. And since yachting is nowhere near a psychological space to voice anything of this, that we're having this conversation is incredible. But yet news outlets still want it more palatable. So it doesn't matter how light I am, how much blonde, even though I can pass as European, the second I open my mouth and you hear my, I would say, very middle balanced views on things, they would consider me as radical. And there was even a moment at the last year's Super Yacht Forum. The YPY was on stage, the young professionals of yachting. Most of them were the Dutch chapter, I think, but also some of the British chapter. And in any case, it was a lot of Caucasian and I think some Asian or Chinese young gentlemen. They all studied and then joined yachting. I think one of them worked on board for a season. And I know for a fact, because I had a previous conversation with them, that they had different topics on their agenda to voice. So let's bear in mind, these are young people who maybe have 3 to 5 years in this industry, so very young. But it's beautiful to see that they have this idealistic view of, we want to bring in innovations, we want to bring in different people. They mentioned people from the university, which can be good, but to exclusively have only one kind and not ex-crew, because we're bleeding a lot of talent from crew leaving as well, not just the people who are not coming in, but the ones that are leaving are leaving. So now you end up with lots of people who have no hands-on experience on a yacht. Anyways, I thought it was great that they missed the mark a little bit on the diversity topic on that, but they did want to bring in different mindsets and technologies and innovations. They didn't specify, but that's what they said. And the audience was asked as well to participate and ask questions. So I was waiting 5-6 questions in, because I was hoping someone would say, what about diversity, getting people from really different cultural backgrounds, socioeconomic backgrounds? But nobody asked, even though the topic came up in other talks before, maybe once a day it came up. Then nobody asked, so I don't want to, but I see it as my duty. I have to make this point, because otherwise I'm as guilty as anyone else, you know, if I don't say it. So I stood up, I got the microphone, I said, I understand that you guys run different circles. Wherever you go to school, these are your fellow students. Wherever you live, this probably they look like you. Wherever you spend your time or the times that you go to the gym, you meet, you know, they're always the same type of people or demographic. I have the United Nations kind of as friends, you know, as I said, Syrian, Lebanese people, Polish, German people, all mixed. And that's why it's so easy for me to find all these different people as well. And I said, have you considered maybe going outside of your regular routine and get different people as well, different ethnicities in? And before I could finish my question, Hank and Tom DeVries, just 2 rows behind me, just suddenly lost it and yelled at me, shut up, sit down, just shut up. And in a really aggressive way. And I was blindsided. And to be very honest with you, this is maybe the third conversation I have about this where I don't well up and where I don't feel emotionally still hurt and pulled back into this moment. Because it wasn't not just embarrassing. It wasn't not just insulting. It wasn't not just hurtful. It was an incredible reflection of what this industry is like, because nobody stood up. Nobody said a thing. It was like their tongues were swollen of pride, or swollen because of lame because of shock. You know, they just froze. Nobody did anything. I turned around and I calmly said, no, you sit down and you listen to this too, because this is important for you too. And then Martin Redman came off the stage running, took the microphone away. I said one more thing to him, but since it's his house, I didn't say it into the microphone. I just said, so this is how it's going to be. This is who you want to be. And then he said, sit down. And I said, since this is your house, I will, but this is not right. So I sat down and they just all continued. I think Ken made a point of diversity is an important topic and put it also on the whiteboard. And then 2 or 3 other people also afterwards mentioned it. But since then, nobody is making a point to address this. They all want to pretend it never happened. I know for a fact a survey came out afterwards and people have mentioned that incident in that survey because they disliked what happened. So I'm still trying to reach out to him to have this conversation, because when I tried after the whole forum, he blew me off. 3 times I tried to approach him. I said very calmly, look, what happened was really hurtful. I understand you're very busy, but can we please have a conversation? Maybe not now, but next week about this, because I want to understand how can I express this differently? Because I'm not a public speaker. I'm not trained in this. You know, I've majored in German and English. That doesn't make me, you know, a public speaker. But he was just absolutely not having it. And he finished my attempts to have a calm conversation, because I said to him, how can I express this better? What has triggered you so hard, and how can I do it better? And he just fletched his teeth at me and went, I don't want to see you. I don't want to hear you. And I just, you know, you're not allowed to talk. And that was just, that was a real window into how his mind and his heart works. And since he selected several people in his mind that he finds acceptable, you know, the sweet people of the white bride who hear the sweet things that they're saying, means that the generation that is leaving is already placing people who are like them into their spots. So nothing is really changing. Racism is alive and well and kicking our butts in this industry, because we think with something like She of the Sea, which is the only one that has diversity in the title, albeit they have, as they said themselves, mainly they have Caucasian people and mainly from the LGBTQIA community, and focusing on, you know, women on deck. There's barely any hospitality people in there, barely any Filipinos, because they have also trouble reaching them. But they still take that as we're doing great, even though they're not getting much of support. And they're covering basically the Caucasian side of diversity and LGBTQIA. And you see it also in yachting. When the topic of, you know, pride comes up, everybody jumps on it. Where were they at Black History Month or something else? You know, there was nothing to be seen. But that they happily champion. And I'm obviously critical of that.
So the thing is, with these conversations, you know, you've said you feel you have a duty to speak up. That is taking on so much of that labor, isn't it? You know, it's that book, isn't it? Why I'm No Longer Speaking to White People About Race. There's a lot of people who just are like, this is effort. This is so much having to come from my side. And even when you're talking about your experiences after the forum, you're the one reaching out. You're the one making the effort. It's a lot of effort and a lot of energy from your side, isn't it? That must get...
Well, I'm not married, so I got the energy, I guess. I just have a dog. I run with my dog. I work. I read. You know, take care of my family. That's basically it. So I got the space and the headspace for it. And I happily carry this, because we can all not carry the same weight. But I do expect people to be elastic enough, young enough in their mind.
So I don't want to put the ball too much in your court, but if I was to put the ball in your court, as it were, what should we be doing as an industry? You know, how do we reach those groups that aren't being reached, and what can we be actually doing on a sort of pragmatic level that's more than lip service, in your view? What would you like people to be doing differently?
Oh, I think that's an easy one. I'm just kidding. No. I think it could start with an easy step. Hire more diverse people. And if you don't know anyone, you can just ask some halflings like I am, see if they can connect them or hook them up with different people and different mindsets. And I think that would be also opening the door to more talents, because we're bleeding talents and we're missing completely the mark of talents. Just by the example of how I got into the industry, and even though any normal person would have left and not taking all the insults and assaults, if the great people leave and work in a more professional space, what are we left with? And this is supposed to be the, you know, the Olympics of hospitality, or the pinnacle of luxury.
But we're not sending them into the lion's den then, are we? We're not sending them into a space where they won't be respected though.
Well, it wouldn't hurt when people would take training more serious. And I'm very critical of education, because in the yacht space, we've often seen that they're overcharged for a very McDonald's mentality. Just drive through, get the cheap hit, and then you leave, you know, and all the nutrition is, well, there's barely any. And obviously you can't build on this kind of flimsy foundation. So yeah. I think there are certain trainings, you know, like the crew coach that does leadership, or Emma from Seize the Mind, who also does mental health space. And they come from an educated background. This to me is the most important. If this is not your wheelhouse, then you should be participating as a student and not as a teacher. And I think, with Grit, we've built a course, which predominantly Lily, my colleague and friend, she built this one. She's in Nairobi. And that one is basically, it's tailored to yachting, for them to understand what our bias is, how to counterweigh your own biases, and how to employ more diverse, and also how to create a space at work where everyone's thinking changes. Because most people still think of diversity as a type of charity, but this is not true. Caucasians or white people will benefit hugely from including cultures, and not just cherry pick what they want. We've seen it now in yachting as well. Lots of big companies are using hip hop music and all of that for their reels. And I go, oh, look at you. You enjoy the music, but you don't want the people, you know, even though there's so many beautiful hostesses and assistants and designers and anyone in this space, they just don't see them in that role. But I think it's possible. Hire more diverse people, give them an opportunity to maybe do an apprenticeship and see how you can do courses and educate, because they're happy to invest into all sorts, but not when it comes to that space.
Absolutely. You can get, I mean, I've done some work with some course providers in my freelancing. And so I've written all about cigar training, you know, flower arranging and all these other things that people will pay money for. But, you know, everyone doing a course on how to be less biased in the workplace, much less popular and much more useful.
Yeah, because the biases include everything, because not everyone, just because you're white doesn't mean you're also wealthy and you're going to, you know, inherit this house from your dad or whatever it is, you know. There's also, there's a lot of differentiations within that. There's also the ethnic white, you know, which is not the good white, you know, to just to paraphrase it, you know. They also have difficulties. And I think if we can see each other's pain and acknowledge it, that we can be more honest with each other, because it's not a personal critique to anyone who is white. It's just my general understanding and how the world is receiving me. I still choose how I react to it. I'm still, you know, responsible for my own emotions. And I think these are spaces or topics that lots of people have not learned who come from such a privileged background, because they've never had to grapple with it. They never had to wrestle with these struggles.
Absolutely. And it means that perhaps this links into some of the conversations you and Meryl were having earlier about having one woman in a position and then that's enough, paying lip service and that's enough, getting on the shallow level. And we've done it now. We've ticked that box. We've had a go. We're not particularly comfortable with it because it's not really our area, but we've tried. And quite frankly, that's not good enough.
Going to be an interesting one, especially now with all the hate that the industry is receiving. You've heard about Chaos that got a bit of a job on the transom, and everyone was flipping out. And I just thought, and then everybody was also then saying we should make a yachting day, or we should, you know, do this and generate more positive news about the industry, which I'm obviously critical of, because why do you want to generate fakeish or positive or stylized news when there is evidence for the negative? Shouldn't we not just deal with this first and not pretend it doesn't happen? Look how Hollywood is imploding in all these areas. There's little and more uprising topics. People are rising, women are rising. And I think this is going to come to a point of where it's going to turn the other way around. And I think once, I don't know if you've heard the people who've done it, you know, Futuro Vegetal, apparently there's a lawyer and a doctor involved. So they're not just street bums or hippies, you know, which obviously people stereotypically want to put them there, you know. Mm-hmm. And also lots of people don't want to be very rich or super wealthy. They just want an understanding of fairness and an opportunity or care. And I think they misinterpreting or misunderstanding the people who do such activism. If it's right or wrong, it doesn't matter at this point. What I see is a group of young people who seem very desperate to be heard and anxious. You don't do something like this out of boredom. Because for that, you have the keyboard warriors, you know, who go on social media and say whatever, but never come out of their house. Yes. But they stood there. And then what I was, and that was actually one of the few times where I was ashamed to be in yachting, because the reaction that was publicly shown on those different posts that were made, people were saying they should go to prison for 10 years. They should scrub it with a toothbrush. They should be suffering in a gulag, which that word I didn't know before, but it came up during the Russian-Ukraine war. And I thought it was incredibly tasteless and absolutely horrific for someone to say this. He obviously didn't get whipped as a kid, you know, otherwise he wouldn't be so happy to jump to violence like that. But yeah, nobody showed much of an understanding, which I thought was also a bit embarrassing because it's such a public forum.
I think what we're identifying is the spotlight is on yachting now. You know, we can't hide anymore. We're not a shady little industry. Obviously, there's NDAs and all sorts of stuff. That's always going to be the case. But Below Deck's done a lot. People are more interested in yachting now than they ever have been. And how you decide to engage with that conversation is your choice, right? You can say, oh, shut them up in a gulag and do this and this and this, and they don't understand it. And you can get defensive. But in my experience, that doesn't get you anywhere. And it's the same with trying to shut you down at a forum. Responding through anger doesn't get you anywhere. You have to try and empathize and understand what led to that particular thing happening. And then you can have an open conversation. Pretending that these conversations aren't happening and that the industry is perfect, that's not going to get us anywhere.
I agree 100%. And it's difficult conversations, but difficult conversations are worthwhile having, just like with most things.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I just want to touch on before we wrap up is you've mentioned about mental health. And I think there's a lot more awareness now of the need to safeguard mental health and look after people on board, because it can be a very high stress environment. But you've spotlighted before, Margarita, that there are specific things that minority groups and non-white people experience in terms of mental health that aren't acknowledged by the industry. So I just wanted to hear your perspective on that a little bit.
Yeah, I've noticed that mental health was then a very trendy topic. Some do this, some of the companies try to address it because it is a bit of a trend and they feel that if they do this superficially, it will fly well with the crew. There's a couple of people in this industry who have really dedicated their time and their resources to provide excellent training on mental health for crew. And I've spoken with them as well, which is mainly Corinne and Emma. And they are very open to include also the ethnic perspective. And we are in conversations of it because they've noticed it as well, that Caucasian people take their services and they're supported by that. But they don't have many ethnic crew joining their courses. And that's not necessarily a financial thing, but it is really a matter of we do not feel seen or heard. And if we voice our thoughts, we get criticized, questioned, or bullied, which shuts it right down. And it's very hard for someone, I think it's possible for someone who is not of ethnicity to understand someone of ethnicity, but it does require also a training of the trainers that they understand what would trigger someone like us. Like, for example, this has really happened this way, or this is not my experience. Well, no shit, it isn't your experience, you know? But guess what? It still happens. So it takes a bit of putting some elasticity into people's minds and allowing also more. If you say crew, that it has to be all crew. It cannot just be a certain kind. And it's the same with the, if you want to highlight LGBTQ and you are for equality, that means every form of equality, not just the one of women, not just the ones of different sexual orientation. It also means the equality of ethnicities. And if it's not equality across the board, then you're basically just fighting for privilege. And that's not okay. And it's okay to admit to this. For example, 2 years ago, I said, I judge you on your behavior and I judge you on the things that you say. Now I don't think like this anymore. It's okay to have a different opinion a few years ago and you updating your belief system or your knowledge or through knowledge to then have a different opinion now. I think it's possible. We can admit to it. No one's perfect.
So as we kind of start coming to our conclusion here, how do you kind of envision the industry headed over the next 5-10 years?
If I, in a positive mindset or in a positive frame, I envision the industry to be very colorful, different shades of the tone, skin tones, different sizes of people, different, even the outfits. You know, when you look into any boat show, everyone is blue and white. I want to see, you know, show me the Caribbean, you know, and not just on the stands that they're representing, but, you know, show really the how innovative, how creative, how you express yourself throughout everything. And I don't think that necessarily means to have only young people, but I think it would be wonderful to see more diversity across age, ethnicity and gender, across the different boards, not just in the blue collar segment. That would be my wish. And my app on every yacht, of course.
Of course.
So, you know, throughout this, you've had ups and downs, challenges, and you're still around. So what has been your secret sauce?
I don't know. They say that I'm tenacious, either tenacious or annoying, whichever way, you know, it depends on which perspective you're looking at it. That's, I think that's also the reason why I call the company Grit, because grit means more than resilience. It's more than that. It's more than being tenacious. It's being passionate and overcoming obstacles, no matter what size. That's what grit means. And I think that is my superpower. And I'm taking a page out of the Caucasian woman's playbook, you know, which, you know, just as a jokey way, you know, how they say, I send thoughts to the universe and the universe will provide and all of the spiritual things. Yeah. Which obviously I'm 39, so, and I was raised by my grandparents, so I have a bit of an old school attitude when it comes to those things. But I do want to learn from any side, so I just stopped being so overly humble, because I would have, you know, 2 years ago I would have never said, I've created a 7-star+ app, I was the first woman and the first person of ethnicity to have done so, you know. I would have not be my own hype man like this. But since I see them doing it, I thought maybe I should do this too, instead of falling for false humility and just say, yeah, this is what I've achieved. Just like an athlete would say, yes, I've achieved a gold medal here or a marathon there. So I'm taking this as a lesson and trying to be my own hype man.
Awesome. Well, Margarita, tell us where people can find you, read more about you, hear what you're working on.
On a personal space, you find me here in Bremen, running by the riverside, you know, or in the office. And yeah, professionally, you find me mostly on Instagram and on LinkedIn, where I usually post updated information, maybe interviews or new features of the app. But yeah, that's where you can find me. And, yeah, you can reach me on Instagram, LinkedIn.
Awesome. Well, it was a great conversation.
Thanks for having me. Every time it's very exciting. One of these days I need to do a course in public speaking to do a better job.
You are exceptional.
Check back every Tuesday for our latest episode and be sure to like, share and subscribe to ShipShape.pro.